I'm Hunter Roberts, and I'm a student at Swedenborgian House of Studies. And today I'm going to be talking about living from the heart, charity, and the chakra system. So I'm going to be kind of going out there a little bit. I'm from California, so I hope you'll bear with me and go out there with me. It's a little experimental, what I'll be doing today. Okay, so just to recap a little bit, in our lectures this week, we've looked at definitions of charity. We've looked at how charity includes prudence or discernment. We've heard that there is a prerequisite for charity that we sometimes like to skip over, a prerequisite for doing good, which is to repent and to cease to do evil. We've learned that the definition of charity, according to the writings of Swedenborg, is one that's located in the center rather than on the boundaries of good and truth. And further, that in that definition, good and truth, faith and charity are defined by their relationship. And that in that relationship, they actually define each other, that they are inseparable. We've talked about neighbors and degrees of neighbors. We've talked about internal and external charity. And we've talked about being charity more than doing charity. So today, I'd like to approach the question, how do we be charity? You know, it's a marvelous injunction, be charity. But how do I do that? I really want to do that, but how do I go about it? If I just stand here and will very hard, I want to be charity, I want to be charity, will that do it? Can I just will myself to will good for another when I don't feel it? And I admit that there are moments where it is not my first impulse. There are moments when I don't automatically and naturally will good for another. I don't know, maybe I'm alone here, maybe I'm gonna really, you know, but I don't know. There are moments when it's just not my first impulse. So if I want to will it, but I'm not, what is my access? Do I just fake it and act like I do? And if I do that, isn't that just the appearance of charity? So highly criticized by Swedenborg. Isn't that hypocrisy? So then what? What access in those situations do I have to myself to actually changing my inner life to will the good when I don't internally will the good, but as a Christian would like to, would wish to will that? I'm going to make the assertion today, or perhaps raise the hypothesis for you to entertain with me, just to consider with me, that perhaps the answer to that question lies in the process of our approach, rather than in following a set of rules for charitable behavior, which Swedenborg says doesn't necessarily change the internal. If we're being charity, charity lies in where we're coming from more than in where we're going. What Swedenborg tells us is that, if I read it correctly, charity is a question of being, right? That if I am being charity, then all my actions that fall out of that being will be charitable. I will automatically be doing charity. In which case, the charity is in the coming from, not in the doing. Yeah? Does that make sense? Okay. So I say this because while we can change our behavior, it's through inner process. That's why I'm saying I suggest we look at process rather than behavior here. Because it's through process that God changes our inner self, our thoughts and our affections. So that's why I'm going to talk about process today. Now, the other day when I lectured, I began my lecture by saying I am but an egg in terms of Swedenborgian doctrine and scholarship that probably most of you know more than I do, actually, in that area. But I know quite a bit about process. I am from California, first of all, which qualifies me eminently to be an authority on process. And moreover, to be an authority on chakras, where we talk a lot about that sort of thing in California. And if I need more qualifications in that area, I will just say that my oldest and dearest friend is one of the eminent writers in the field. So I've absorbed rather a lot by osmosis. For another, we could call me a practicing changeologist, sometimes called a therapist, sometimes called a coach, sometimes called a personal development consultant, sometimes called a counselor. So I am trained in and familiar with a great many change methods, which actually help people to alter their interior landscapes. And Laura knows some of these too. So what I'm asserting is that our access to charity lies in our heart rather than in our head. Swedenborg says, a person is born to the end, and I'm going to change some of the exclusive language here just for fun to she instead of he, just for a change of pace, which I believe Swedenborg would probably have done were he alive today. A person is born to the end that she may become a charity, but she cannot become a charity unless she constantly wills and does the good of charity from affection and delight. And that's from the little book, Charity, the heading of section 6. So after all, affection and delight come from the heart, not from the head. It's with our heart that we respond to a new baby or puppy dog, the photograph of a far-off child starving in a far-off land. And yet we see that picture and something in us responds, and that's not a head thing. It's a heart thing. It's with our heart that we share the sadness or the joy of a loved one. It's with our heart that we hold dear or treasure, as related to the word charis, which we talked about yesterday, or caritas. So it is in the being of charity as opposed to the doing of charity. So let me say that again. So I think I'm going to put my glasses on. I can't quite see. There. So the being of charity as opposed to the doing of charity is a task of the heart. In being charity, we are called to live from our hearts. Now, please understand, I'm not saying we should shut down our minds and stop practicing discernment. I'm not saying let's go into la-la land, you know, the world of Hallmark greeting cards and New Age la-la spirituality. You know, oh, everything is everything, and Did you ever notice that God was dog spelled backwards? I'm not suggesting that. I'm not suggesting a lack of discernment here, okay? But because that would be love without wisdom. That would be goodness without faith, which would not be love or goodness at all. It would just be mere cheap sentimentality. What I am saying is that it's only in having an open heart that we can be charity, so that the actions of charity fall out of that being naturally. And I'm going to quote Swedenborg again here. The will corresponds to the heart. This cannot be seen so clearly, taken by itself, as when the will is considered as in its effects. Taken by itself, it can be seen by this, that all affections which are of love induce changes in the heart's pulsations, as is evident from the pulse of the arteries, which act synchronously with the heart's changes, and pulsations in accordance with the love's affections are innumerable. Those felt by the finger are only that the beats are slow or quick, high or low, weak or strong, regular or irregular, and so on. Thus, that there is a difference in joy and sorrow, in tranquility of mind and wrath, in fearlessness and in fear, in hot diseases and in cold, and so on. Because the two motions of the heart, systolic and diastolic, change and vary in this manner according to the affections of each one's love. Many of the ancient, and after them some modern writers have assigned the affections of the heart, have assigned the affections to the heart, and have made the heart their dwelling place. From this have come into common language such expressions as a stout heart, a timid heart, a joyful heart, a sad heart, a soft heart, a hard heart, a great heart, a weak heart, a whole heart, a broken heart, a heart of flesh, a heart of stone, likewise being gross or soft or tender in the heart. Giving the heart to a thing, giving a single heart, giving a new heart, laying up in the heart, receiving in the heart, not reaching the heart, hardening one's heart, a friend at heart. Also the terms concord, discord, folly, vercordia, and other similar expressions of love and its affections. Divine Love and Wisdom, number 378. So we're told further that love of heaven is in the head, that the love of the world is in the breast and abdomen, and that the love of the self in the feet. Swedenborg tells us that when these loves are rightly arranged, they are all fine and necessary, allowing us to live well. Moreover, they constitute an element of charity when prioritized and used correctly. The charity has something in common with all these three because in itself, it is the love of uses, for charity wishes to do good to the neighbor, and good is the same as use. Now, each of these three areas also regards uses as its ends. For the love of heaven regards spiritual uses, the love of the world regards natural or civil uses, and the love of the self, bodily or domestic uses, performed for oneself or one's family. And that's from True Christianity. Now, interestingly enough, this statement by Swedenborg in the placement and use of various types of affections corresponds to the Eastern concept of the chakras. So I'm going to say a little bit about what the chakras are for those of you who are not familiar with the concept. Basically, chakras are energy centers in the body which radiate different loves, where different loves center or collect. And I'm going to show them to you on this, and then I'm going to do this little experiment where we're going to see if we can feel our chakras, and most of all, our heart. Because in working with these chakras, we actually have access to these different parts of ourselves. We actually can feel what's open and what's closed? Where is that energy center? And how do these different energy centers connect and radiate in my own being, located through my embodied self? So the three down here, now Swedenborg talked about the feet, that the self is located in the feet. And it's interesting because when you do chakra work, you actually do start with feeling your feet. So you might start just by putting your feet on the ground if you want to, and just kind of feel what that feels like. And notice if you feel your feet, or if mostly you don't feel them at all, mostly you don't notice them, which is kind of how a lot of us walk around. We're kind of up here. We're kind of these walking heads, and we basically just kind of use our feet and legs to kind of carry our heads around. But Swedenborg says, no, that's where the domestic self is. That's where, and the chakra system says that the first chakra, which is where you sit, right there, where you feel, is actually where survival is located. The tribal, the need to take care of the most mundane orders of business, without which nothing else could really occur very well. You know, just taking care of making sure you eat or handle your money to put food on the table. And that chakra is right there. Some people at the base of the spine, some people place it sort of where you sit, but that's where it is. The second chakra, which is right a little bit below your belly button, is the center of connection. And that too fits with Swedenborg's center of the affections of, that's the beginning of, I think, where Swedenborg would place the civil world. So this is where we begin to connect to others, is in the second chakra. That's the center of trust. The belly opens and receives. The third chakra is placed right around the solar plexus, and that's where, if you were to learn Tai Chi or Karate, that's where the chi is placed in most systems, although sometimes it's placed lower. It's right here. That's called the center of will. Now, interestingly enough, these chakras also correspond to our development. And somebody quoted to me the other night a quote by Jung, which I had never heard, which was that we spend the first half of our lives developing a self so that in the second half of our lives we can let it go. And the chakras correspond to those developmental stages as well. If you think about a baby first has to develop a sense of its existence, its survival. That's first chakra. It's eating, sleeping, dirtying its diapers, right? Crying, survival. It's all about survival. Second chakra is reaching out. Second chakra is I want. First chakra is I am. Second chakra is I want. Third chakra is I will. That's the beginning of the will. And those first three chakras, we could say, may correspond to proprium, or what the Eastern disciplines would say is the ego, but what Swedenborg called proprium. So those first three, so the child develops reaching out and then willing. I want to do it. I want to do it myself. My mother tells the story that was basically the first sentence out of my mouth was I used to refer to myself, since my name, my given first name is Wendy, I would refer to myself as Wee Wee when I was, you know, less than a year old. And she swears that the first thing I ever said was I wanted to do something that she was about to do for me. And I shouted out, "No, Wee Wee do it." You know, so that's the will that I've been struggling with ever since. But you have to have it before you can really struggle with it. Now I'm going to start working at the top down, okay? So we've covered the first three. Up here, right there, which is where, interestingly enough, Swedenborg says where we connect to heaven. In the chakra system, it says, well, that's where we connect to heaven. What do you think? That's where, that's called the crown chakra. And in the crown chakra, we open and we can feel the inpouring or the influxing of the divine. Here is where they call the third eye. And if you've ever been with anybody who's highly intuitive or psychic, their third eye is very open. And they'll tell you they can actually feel stuff right there. It's not so much connecting to the heaven. It might or it might not be, depending on how they're using it. But they can feel stuff. And maybe you're intuitive. And maybe you can kind of sometimes get a sense of who somebody is or what they're going to do or what they're going to say or what's going to happen or, right? If you're intuitive, borderline psychic, whatever that means. You pick up stuff that isn't just in the rational world. That's what that chakra is. And then here is the throat chakra, the chakra with which we express and communicate. So these would be corresponding to Swedenborg's idea about the upper third of the body, which connect us to heaven. We take in God's word, we take in God's influx, we feel it, we express it into the world, we have a sense of it, we speak it, we communicate into the world. So what's this here? That's what I'm really going to focus on. That's the heart. Can tell because there's a heart there. And the heart in this system is where the upper and the lower chakras meet. And by lower, it doesn't mean they're not good, okay? It just means they're the basics. They're the things that have to sort of get handled before the uppers can get handled. Otherwise, we come crashing down. The heart is where they meet. The heart is where they meet. It's where heaven and earth meet. So I'm going to ask you to engage with me now in a little experiment of feeling your own chakras. And you can do as much or as little of this as you like. Obviously, it's up to you if you want to do it. But if you want to do it, I would invite you to just put your feet on the ground just for the moment and close your eyes and just go inside and begin to be with that interior world. And notice the way your feet feel on the floor. You might notice a little bit more rhythmic breathing as you inhale and exhale and inhale and exhale. And you might even imagine that your breath is coming in through your feet, connecting you with the earth, connecting you with the ground of this beautiful earth. And as you breathe, allow yourself to imagine that you feel a ball of energy right where you're sitting. And just breathe into that ball of energy and feel it growing. Feel it intensifying. And for some people, if you choose to be visual, you might envision that ball of energy as red. And breathe into that red ball and feel how it is open or closed, how it connects you to the earth, how it gives you strength. And just breathe into that ball for a moment and I'll be quiet. And then allow your attention to move up your spine to right around behind your belly. And feel how that center wants to reach out. Feel that ball of energy, which traditionally is seen as orange. As you inhale and you exhale through that ball of energy, that orange ball right just below your navel. Feel if it's open or closed. See if you visualize it. Some people get pictures, some people feel it more. You might even get a sound. Whatever you get is perfect. And if you don't get anything, that's worth noticing also. And just breathe into that ball of energy and feel how you can just kind of drop into it. You might even imagine water flowing there, like a bowl or like a fountain. And I'll be quiet and just let you feel that for a moment as you breathe. You might notice how nice it is to go inside and check in with these centers. How as you check in with them, they begin to kind of balance themselves. And then allow your attention to come up to around your solar plexus, just below your rib cage. I like to imagine my chakras behind, right on the inside, nestled on the inside of my spine, and this one is yellow, the golden yellow of power. Nothing wrong with it, as long as it's connected up. And feel that yellow, feel that energy, and see if you can now bring that energy so it connects with the first two, so you almost like have a line going, connecting these three balls of energy on the inside of your spine. And I'll be quiet and just let you feel that. Some people feel this one like a more like fire. And now, I'm going to invite you to just let those three continue to do what they're doing, to vibrate, and to put your attention on the very top of your head, and to imagine that the crown of your head is opening to the heavens. That brilliant lavender white light just opening to the heavens, opening to God's influx, as if heavenly love is just pouring into you. Love and wisdom pouring into you, which is there all the time. It's all the time. Just opening to that. And just allow that to go in and vibrate this purple white ball. Allow that energy to move down to right between your eyebrows, right where your pineal gland is located. And feel how that opens you to knowing, to connecting at a spiritual level with everything and everyone around you. Notice if that is open or closed. And if it feels open too much, if sometimes you wish, oh, I wish I didn't know so much. I wish I didn't intuit or feel so much of what other people's going on at that intuitive level, well, you can close it a little bit. And if you want to, if it feels a little closed and you want to experiment with it, feel free to just invite it to open a little bit. Notice what happens. And you can imagine that as indigo. Indigo. And breathe into that. And then allow that energy to continue down the back of the inside of your neck. Right to your throat, right where your neck connects with your shoulders, right that little hollow there. And that's a blue color, a blue ball of communication. You may notice if you're someone who has difficulty expressing yourself, if you get choked up when you try to talk in public, you may notice that that doesn't feel, you don't have a very strong sense of that one. You may notice you don't have, it doesn't feel very open there. In which case, just breathe into it and allow it to open just a little bit more. That blue ball. And now, feel the energy coming up from the ground, up through base of your spine, your belly, your solar plexus, and that celestial energy coming down from your crown chakra, through your pineal gland or your third eye, through your throat, and feel those two energies now meeting in your heart, blending in your heart, the blue and the yellow making green. And feel that lovely green energy in your heart, that lovely green energy that allows you to be charity. That when you center yourself there, rather than in your head, where we all too often center ourselves, if we locate the self in the heart, then it becomes so much easier to be charity. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to effort at it. then we are being in the heart. And in being in the heart, we can be love. We can feel how dear all of life is to us, and most of all, how dear the Lord and the Lord's kingdom are to us, and how we want to bring those into civil and moral being on earth by treasuring all of it and extending our love forward. And as you feel that love connecting you with everything coming from your heart, just notice what that's like. And whenever you wish, open your eyes. Whenever you're ready, take your time. I really want to thank you for trying that with me. I know it's not done in New England very much. So I really appreciate your generosity. Before I conclude my remarks, I would very much love to hear if anybody, and don't feel obligated, but if anybody has anything that they noticed that they think they would like to share with the rest, I would be very interested in hearing if anybody noticed anything interesting. Anybody notice anything they want to share? Yeah. Have you got microphone?
Yes.
Thank you. Suzanne?
Well, just to comment on the colors, and when we were sitting with the color green in our hearts, I was just so aware of the green in the world, that that's the color of the world, that the world is there for us to love and be loved by, and that the complementary color is the blue of the sky, which in when you talked about communication, I think of, you know, that's the self-communication of God to us, that our entire world is the green of love and the blue of God's communicating with us. And it was, that was very profound. Thanks.
Wow, lovely. Bob had something to share, yeah? Did I see your hand? Am I right? Yeah, okay, good.
Well, I appreciated the invitation to relax, actually. When you said open, I noticed muscular relaxation.
Yeah, good, good. Anybody else? Okay, good. Well then, I'll just conclude by saying, when we can bring the heart and the mind together, what we have is exactly what Swedenborg's talking about, I believe. The marriage of love and wisdom, which leads us to a marriage of spiritual good, which is internal, and moral good, which is external. And that it is in this meeting of internal will an external will that we find true charity, which we might say is the meeting of heaven and earth. Thank you. So, questions, Roy.
I remember in the Muslim faith, they have something that's called the Rasa Diri, and it's a place very deep in the heart. I remember singing the wedding cantata of Bach, the part of the bridegroom who represents God and the bride who represents the church. And he sings within my heart of hearts. And back to the Rasa Diri, it's a part of our being that is so deep. It's the meeting place between God and ourselves. And it's so deep we can't really mess it up in any way.
Yes, Jim, is it? Yeah.
I shared
the ability to relax, and I've been exposed to a little bit of this before, and you're very good at leading us. Swedenborg talks a lot about process, however, and that influx from heaven is not something you can switch on and off, but have to learn through a process of regeneration, I mean reformation, regeneration, turning away from evil, and you get influx, as I understand it, in proportion to your success in following that very difficult process of struggling with sin and reforming.
Yeah.
So do you feel that this can be, you can get heavenly influx by a technique?
No, not merely by a technique, and thank you for raising that. And as I said, I know probably less about Swedenborgian doctrine than many people here, so I am willing to be corrected if I'm wrong. But my thing is that the influx is always there, and we get it to the extent that we turn toward it rather than turning away from it. That when we turn toward evil, we are turning away from God's influx. But that in any moment, we can choose to open to God's influx. But that is not simply a technical matter. Yet, it is always there available to us. Am I right about that? Wrong about that? Does anybody else have anything to say about that?
But Roy? It's not a simple process. It's a long struggle with the sins in your life and the love of self and of the world that may be dominating.
Yeah. I would say that God's love is available in any moment. That you don't have to have completely completed a regenerative process for that to be available. You may not be able to feel it, but it's there. That would be my understanding, and as I said, I'm willing to be corrected.
Well, I would just further add to that even in the moment when we turn to God, that the influx we're able to receive is in proportion to the state we are at the time. One of the fellows that I met in seminary, Tom Sicklinger, once wrote that accepting how much influx there is into us is like trying to accept a river into a garden hose, that we are so small in our ability to receive, and God's influx is so great, but that as we become more and more skilled and reminded more frequently to turn to God, we actually are able to open ourselves to more and more.
Yeah, if I can just piggyback on that briefly, and then Roy has something pressing to say. I think that also, to the extent that we can open to it, even if it's only a little bit, that little bit helps us. That it's a two-step dance. That's my understanding of transformation, more than of Swedenborgian doctrine. That as we can take in love and wisdom, to whatever extent we're able to, that gives us a little bit more of the wherewithal, the courage to let go of what we need to let go of. So that we can let in more, so that we can let go of more.
Brings to mind when I went to seminary, I almost think it was to meet this very wonderful Old Testament professor who, unlike any other human beings, maybe other than my parents, could reduce me to tears and joy in about two sentences. And when I read these things about the Eastern and Indian things, I was impressed by how many people had thousand-petaled lotuses opening and these states of being and consciousness. And I forgot what I was going to point. in our culture, Western, you have St. Paul writing, "For me to live is Christ," and then maybe a handful of other people who attain this state, of whom Swedenborg, I believe, was one. Since this is sort of an area of yours, maybe you can explain this.
I'm sorry, what was, I'm not clear on the question, Roy. What is it you'd like me to explain?
Well, out of your body of knowledge of this, why would you say that, the Eastern people received these enlightenments more so than we in the Christian West?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know that I have any, you know, statistical information on this, obviously. What I would say is that Swedenborg talks about accommodation. And so what we receive and the form in which we receive it has a lot to do with accommodating to our cultural milieu or symbol system, if you will. Or as I sometimes say, water can only come through the pipes that are there. So depending on the shape of the pipes that are there to receive it, that's the shape that revelation is going to take. That's my belief. So if you have a shape in your sort of cultural set of expectations of the many-petaled lotus, then it seems that you would be more likely to get enlightenment in the shape of the many-petaled lotus, because God accommodates. George gets the last word.
And when we were getting ready for this, you were talking about the Eastern tendency to come up through the heart and gets focused on the upper chakras, which in a sense begins to cut you off from the world.
Right.
It is a retreat inward. We had Rotary is sponsoring a student exchange, and our current student is in India. And she says some wonderful things about the family she's living with. She said the hardest thing is walking down the street and just having to walk by so many destitute people who are ignored by everybody else.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a different set of things. It's very hard to impose our standards on them or them on ours and evaluate and say who's doing better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But each approach has its merits and its abuses.
Well, and that's why developmentally, if we look at it from a Western developmental perspective, you have to have the development of the self before you can move to the connection with all that is. Otherwise, you've got no self to connect, and then you begin to move up into the higher levels so that they're grounded in something. So that would be a more Western approach to the chakras. Exactly, yeah, to stay centered in the heart, absolutely. That's where you want your locus to be. That if you get up here and that's where you start centering, then it doesn't reflect in the external. Yeah. Okay, I thank you all very much.